SpongeBob. Petition the court and serve the police department. Attorney General is any alleged victim.
Sorry, guys.
Right? You got to check. And then they all come in and say no or yes.
Yeah.
And so just creating that
opportunity. Okay, so we're ready.
So, what's the answer? If we find eligible for what plan?
What I think what you're essentially saying is providing the ability to.
Okay, if we can begin, we're going to kind of skip around on the agenda. First, I've been requested to not hear Senate File 36 under Marty's bill, so that's stricken from the agenda. And we'll start, I think, with Senate File 2805, Senator Carlson, the claims bill. Senator Carlson, I understand that there is an amendment, but it looks like there are, it's not a delete everything amendment, so why don't you begin to present the bill, and then we can take.
Mr. Chair, I don't believe your microphone is working appropriately.
It's not. Okay. Okay. If that's any better. Pardon? This is not better? Okay. That's why we need a new building. Do we have? Well, I'll tell you what. There you go. Okay. Maybe it's just after getting beaten up yesterday by all the Republicans. I'm just kind of worn out.
Something about a building, you said? I'm sorry.
Okay, so again, we'll start with Senate File 2805, Senator Carlson. And I know that there's an amendment. Why don't you present the bill, and we can then take the amendment.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee.
This is the claims.
I'm bringing you the annual claims bill, which is Senate File 2805. The claims bill was introduced in the House as House File 3241 and the Senate as 2805. The Subcommittee on Claims met on March 31st, 2014, and the identical author's amendments were prepared for each body. The 2014 claims bill appropriates a total of $83,332.34. All of the claims comprising this appropriation relate to personal injury, claims against the Minnesota Department of Corrections, and these are all in Section 1 of the bill. And members, you can see these are the two books that contain all of the claims that we did review as part of reviewing this bill. I have Ms. Michelle Kimmins here as general counsel for the committee, and she can expand on any of the individual claims and also answer any questions.
Ms. Timmons?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Michelle Timmons. I'm the reviser of statutes, and since the Claims Committee is the joint House and Senate Subcommittee on Claims, one of my duties is to serve as legal counsel to the Subcommittee on Claims. The meat of the bill is actually in the amendment because the Subcommittee on Claims meeting was March 31st. And as Senator Carlson already mentioned, the Section 1 of the bill relates all to personal injury claims through the Department of Corrections, and the appropriations in the bill all relate to those matters. And I can answer any individual ones.
Okay, well,
Section 2 relates to a Department of Transportation claim, which is a little bit different in that it is authorization to pay amounts to workers who were underpaid pursuant to a contract, and it authorizes the department to pay that amount out of the retainage, contract retainage.
Okay, and I I see now, I'm looking at the bill and the amendment, that it is basically the amendment. So why don't we adopt the amendment, the A14 amendment? Has that been distributed? Okay, so it's in the packets.
We should use this one.
I'm sorry,
Chair,
is it?
Mr. Chair? We should use the A1.
Yeah, I just Mr. Bonner just told me that. I had the one in front of me. So let's ignore the A14. Do we have the A1? Is that one distributed? That's in. Okay. All right. So to get the bill in front of us properly, Senator Champion moves adoption of the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. So now we've got the bill in proper order. So, Senator Carlson or Ms. Timmons, anything else you want to say about the bill? Questions on the part of committee members? Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe Senator Latz once chaired this claims committee, and I did following him. It's a very good experience in learning about different aspects of the state. Question, Senator Carlson, were these recommendations all unanimous?
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Wieger, I believe nearly every one was unanimous. We did have a problem where some members couldn't be at the entire committee meeting, so we, there are six members on the committee, but we did have at least a two to one majority from each body for those that didn't have all six members there. So. And the most of them were unanimous, yes. Yeah. And the important one, which is covered in the Department of Transportation Section 2, that was unanimous, yes.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Wieger.
Follow up. I remember a few years ago, one lady presented a claim, which we did honor, regarding damage to her car from a pothole. Did you have any claims submitted regarding damage due to potholes?
Mr. Senator Chair and Senator Wieger, no, I don't believe we did. We had no potholes involved.
Senator Carlson, on Section 2, so apparently the contractor has disappeared or is bankrupt and can't be found, and there was no – what were the circumstances?
Mr. Chair, The issue was that there was some work done on a state contract. The contractor did not pay prevailing wage and also skipped the state without paying some of the workers. One of the workers made a complaint. They did find that the contractor is now in Texas and didn't respond to inquiries, and there still was the 10% holdback. And what the committee decided to do is, because the contract did say that the contractor had agreed to pay prevailing wage and also that the work had been completed on the contract, that they would distribute that 10% holdback in a pro rata basis to the employees that were shorted.
And second, I note that you name one of the people who lost wages, but in Subdivision B, you indicate that there's the need to notify the seven additional individuals. Do we have to name the individuals? I don't know that I've seen a claims bill where we haven't named the claimants.
I'll have
Ms. Timmons?
Mr. Chairman and members, the only Corey Zion made a claim in the claims committee, but reason why we knew there were eight individuals who were underpaid is because the Department of Transportation did an audit, a wage audit, and that is what really led Mr. Zion to understand that he had a claim or that he was underpaid. So only one individual made a claim, and so he's named in Section 2A. But there were seven other individuals named in the audit who did not make claims, who similarly were underpaid. And so we've simply authorized the Department of Transportation to contact those individuals named in their own department audit and let them know that they are eligible to receive a pro rata amount out of the contract retainage.
I guess I inferred that from the language. What I'm wondering is in a claims bill, do you have to name the individual? That's my question, because I don't think I've seen a claims bill that has had unnamed individuals like this subdivision has.
Mr. Chairman and members, in this instance, since the seven individuals who were named in the audit did not make claims, this was drafted in this way. My understanding is the Department of Transportation and Mr. James County, their counsel, is here in the audience if you wish to ask him questions. But I believe this is sufficient to identify the individuals who can be contacted.
Yeah, my question is not a dispute relative to whether or not the claim should be paid, but whether or not in terms of statutory construction we're allowed to do this without naming the individuals.
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe there's anything that would require us to name the individuals. I think it's operating from the standpoint that we need to be able to identify the individuals, and I think the Department of Transportation can from their own audit.
Okay. All right. Senator Doble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Senator Carlson or Ms. Timmons, if I missed it, forgive me. I know it's not a huge amount of money, but has MnDOT obtained some form of a judgment? So should this individual magically reappear in the state, they could recoup these dollars in some form or fashion?
Ms. Timmons?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Senator Dibble, I think it would be best if we ask the Department of Transportation representative to step to the podium.
Certainly. Just to identify yourself, and if you can
answer, Chairman, Senator Dibble. Mr. Chairman, my name is Jim County, and I'm with MnDOT. I'm the Assistant Chief Counsel for Contracts and Construction. Mr. Chairman, to Senator Dibble's question, The work on the project has been completed. We pursued a number of steps to get MG Carlson to pay these workers properly, including attempting to default them and go after their bonding company under the performance bond. Their bonding company denied payment under the performance bond. I think there probably really is no legal recourse to the department besides that, because the work has, in fact, been completed. It's just a matter of paying these individuals, and it's the same money that we would have paid to the contractor, so we're not paying out extra money because of this.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Slightly separate matter, but as long as I have MnDOT here. So should this individual reappear in the state and try to obtain a future public contract, particularly with the state, are they on some sort of list that would not allow them to do that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, at MnDOT's urging, the Department of Administration has suspended this vendor, and they are in the process of working on debarring him, so he won't be eligible for public work in Minnesota for a period of several years.
Thank you.
And when that happens, does that carry through to any other agency? Is there a list, as far as you know, that would be kept by admin as opposed to MnDOT to prohibit this contractor from working in the state?
Mr. Chairman, yes, the Department of Admin does maintain a list of vendors who are suspended and debarred, and those vendors are ineligible to work for any state agency then.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand that our jurisdiction is with regard to the finances, but I can't help but ask the question when I see three different claims for individuals with injured right hands. That seems odd, and so I'm wondering if either Senator Carlson or Ms. Timmons would have some details with regard to what happened in those instances. I presume they're all unrelated, but it still just seems strange.
Ms. Timmons?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senator Bonoff. Let's see. The Gary Green claim, that was a sentence to service claim in Hennepin County, and they were building a wall with boulders, and one of the boulders slipped and came down on Mr. Green's right hand. And so that's how that one happened. Then there were several that really had to do with saw injuries. Donald Merrow, that was another sentence to service claim, because the claims subcommittee on claims hears all the sentence to service injuries that occur at the county levels and provide the remedy for those as well. That was a saw incident where Mr. Merrill's right hand was caught between the ram and the cutting blade on a wood splitter, and he had partial amputation of fingertips on the third, fourth, and fifth digits of the right hand. Then, let's see, Jamie Patton, that was actually in Faribault in the cabinet maker shop, and that was another saw injury, and that was more serious than the Merrill one I just talked about, where the second, third, and fourth fingertips on the right hand were amputated. Mm-hmm. I do think, in fact, Senator Carlson's co-chair, Representative Mary Murphy, commented on all the hand injuries in the House hearing on the Subcommittee on Claims Bill. And, that is something perhaps other committees could look at, or some sort of safety measures dealing with these saw issues.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonoff.
Ms. Timmons, that's what strikes me as well. You know, is that an appropriate activity for people in that situation? Because I don't think that we want to be in that position. Thank you. So, and just a follow-up to that, Mr. Chair, Ms. Timmons, so what committee would be looking at that? Would that fall under public safety in Senator Dibble's committee, or where would that be?
Well, if it's corrections, it would be Senator Latz.
So it would be there. Okay. Thank you.
Chair?
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Timmons, I'm just wondering, for what you described there, these amounts seem awfully low. Is this coincide with the workers' comp injury payments?
Ms. Timmons.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senator Goodwin. Yes, we are not under the jurisdiction of workers' comp in the committee, but the workers' comp guidelines that are in the Minnesota rules, the payment schedules, are what the Subcommittee on Claims follows.
Thank you.
And Ms. Timmons, that was my question as well. And I noted, members, there is a more comprehensive summary prepared by Ms. Timmons that's attached to the bill that goes into a little bit more detail and talks about the nature of payment. Although I would agree, I had the question, looking at the payments, I assumed it was the workers' comp schedule, and I saw the memo saying it was. I still wonder as to why somebody would not pursue the claim beyond that. But obviously they were willing to settle, so. Ms. Timmons.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The way the statutes are set up, if these injuries are in a work setting, the Subcommittee on Claims process is the exclusive remedy. And then so there isn't a tort remedy that's available for these particular types of claims. And then under the rules of procedure of the Subcommittee on Claims, pain and suffering will not be paid. So it's the workers' comp schedule rate for permanent injuries, plus if there are outside medical providers, for example, in the sentence to service cases, many times outside medical providers provide medical treatment. and then we reimburse those medical providers at medical assistance rates, and that explains why those amounts are also relatively low.
Okay. Further questions on the bill? Would anybody like to?
So move.
Senator Wieger moves that Senate file 2805 as amended be recommended to pass. If there's no further question, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Carlson, Ms. Timmons.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Well, I guess I don't have a choice since Senator Sieben has grabbed the table.
Ready to go.
Fired up. Ready. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. So we're doing, House File 2180, is that correct?
Senate File 1835, please.
Okay, so the Senate language is contained in Senate File 1835, but the House file has come over. So Senator Sieben moves substitution of Senate File 1835 with the House File 2180. What?
Mr. Chair, maybe I'm not understanding you, but we still want to work off of the Senate file language.
Yes.
Okay.
But we have the House file in front of us.
Okay.
So on that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. So we have House File 2180 with the Senate language. So, Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 1835 is commonly referred to this session as the Health Insurance Transparency and Accountability Bill. And what it does is it aims to bring more transparency or sunshine to the purchasing of health care insurance by school districts. The bill encourages competition by requiring districts to get proposals from different insurance providers. I'll be very clear that it does not mandate or specify what a district needs to do once they receive those proposals, but it does require them to get different quotes.
Senator Sieben, could you pull the mic a little bit closer?
Sure.
Maybe it's just...
This is the bill's fifth committee stop, and at each stop we've made amendments or taken different concerns into account. As far as it relates to the finance division, in an earlier committee, we did remove the bill as introduced included a $1 million appropriation to MMB for PEEP to administer the bill. In other words, for PEEP to make required bids or give required bids to school districts. That was taken out at a previous committee, and then subsequently, we did receive a fiscal note, which you have in your packets, and that's why the bill is back before this committee. As members will recall, there was discussion of this in your finance bill on the floor yesterday. Members will recall that there is a provision in the finance bill that says that should this Senate file or this legislation move forward, the appropriation for it was contained in the finance bill that you carried, Mr. Chair. I do have an amendment. It's the A-17 amendment that I would like to offer at this time, and I don't know if members have it. Doesn't
okay,
look like
if
it.
We can have the A-17 amendment distributed. Okay, Senator Sieben.
So, Mr. Chair, on lines 1.2 to 1.3, you'll see that this includes language around wellness plans, and this change was requested by service co-ops to ensure that wellness incentives are not considered compensation that could present a conflict of interest. So this makes clear that wellness plans are excluded in this section of the bill. Lines 1.4 to 1.6 is language that was requested by St. Paul Public Schools that gives school districts the same flexibility on timelines as to when they're gathering their requests for proposals as it does for self-insured districts. Lines 1.7 to 1.9 is language requested again by the co-ops and the MREA, or the rural schools, which ensures that rural schools can continue to use joint power agreements to work with co-ops to help administer RFPs and process their proposals. And then lines 110 to the end, it's again an issue related to the timing of when St. Paul Schools has already sent out their request for proposals and received proposals back right now. So this is lining up the timeline so that that process can move forward concerning the effective date.
Okay, so we have the A-17 amendment in front of us. Is there a discussion on that? If not, Senator Sieben moves the A-17 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. So, Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm happy to stand for questions on the bill, or if members would like to talk about the whatever they'd like.
Questions, or Senator Peterson?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, I don't know a lot about this issue, but my first reaction is that that the staff members would have the ability to go in this direction right now through their contract negotiations. Is that accurate, or is that true? Or
Mr. Peterson, or excuse me, Senator Cohen and Senator Peterson, the overall idea with the legislation is that what we've seen happen with school districts in some cases, school districts will have a particular affinity to a certain insurance plan. And so they may continue to renew that insurance plan without getting different, without understanding their other options, so without going out and seeking other bids. So what this legislation is doing is not requiring them to choose a specific bid. It doesn't specify which plan they choose, but it's saying that at the end of the length of the term of their insurance, in their insurance plan, that they need to go out and seek other proposals. So they need to at least get that competition so that the school districts can see what other options are and what the choices are for their school district.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, so right now would a workers group, whether it be the teachers or some other union within the school district now, do they have the ability to negotiate this in their contracts?
Mr. Retke asked if he could just respond to that, but
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, my name is Brandon Retke, Education Minnesota. Currently, when we do negotiations between labor unions and the district, what they negotiate over is the percent of the premium that the district may provide. Is it a percent of a premium? Is it a hard dollar cap towards the premium? Who's eligible? But the selection of the carrier and the selection of the plan does subside in the approval of the school board and the district administration. So during our contract negotiations, we may bring up discussions about who the plan is, but that decision's up to the district. What we negotiate over in our contracts is basically the eligibility requirements for insurance and the contribution levels between the employees and employers for those benefits.
So Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, it seems like we have a disagreement between the school board, who's I would say has just as much motivation for a competitive health insurance plan as the staff members do. In fact, they have more because they're probably paying a significantly higher percentage of the premium than the staff members are. And it appears the staff members aren't bringing this up in their negotiations for some reason. if that's the case, so this bill is basically forcing, is it asking the school board members, you're saying to get additional quotes, but I'm a little hesitant, I guess, because I'm not one that believes a school board isn't going to get the most competitive quote for their staff and for their own budget, I guess.
Mr. Chair, yes, and Senator Peterson, I think that we have seen with school districts around the state that certainly they do want to get the use their taxpayer, their dollars most as efficiently as possible. But in some instances, school districts have continued to renew contracts with individual insurance plans for reasons that aren't exactly transparent or aren't known really as the reason why. For instance, in a district that I represent, they had a renewal rate. Their renewal bid came back at a 36% increase. Then when the teachers requested and others requested that they get other bids, including a bid from PEEP, the bid came in at 16% increase. So just by the process of requesting different bids, the district was then, the insurance provider then came back and lowered their bid. So I think that the overall goal of the legislation is to bring that competition to the school district so that they will ensure that they're going out and getting different bids, and then that the school boards and the administration can respond accordingly. The other provision that is in this legislation states that school board employees or school board officials would now be subject to the gift ban. And this is coming about because in some cases we've been told that school board members may have been receiving some sort of compensation for directing their school district towards a particular health insurance plan. And so this is another provision that I think helps bring transparency and ensure that limited dollars are going towards health insurance.
Mr. Chair. Yeah, Senator Sieben, Mr. Chair, this is a responsibility I have at the company I work, and I would and say I negotiate a health and benefit plan that it's valued at something just under $1 million. I've never gotten a gift. I've never been offered a gift, so I'd be kind of curious what kind of gifts you think the school board members are getting.
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, we've received different. I've heard instances of whether it be meals that are offered, golf clubs in some cases, other gifts that because school board members aren't subject to the gift ban, I think there's no reason why we shouldn't apply this to superintendents and other district officers. So,
great, thank you.
I don't see a problem with that.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, I have some questions as well. I think you heard there were some questions on the floor yesterday with regard to the provision being carried in the finance bill, and I know when we had that bill before us, I questioned it because we hadn't heard this bill in committee, so I'm wondering what happened, why we didn't have an opportunity to allow our school districts to go through that process of coming to the table and testifying as to whether or not they supported this and how it would affect them, why we're looking at this in a finance committee without having gone through that process.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonhoff, as I stated earlier, we did have an appropriation in the bill earlier. It was removed because for different reasons, of which I supported, and then a fiscal note came back that includes the cost to MMB for PEEP to administer the bids that school districts will request from PEEP. So, you know, as to why this bill wasn't scheduled before Senator Cohen's larger finance bill, I think it's more just a question of timing. And we got the fiscal note we got the fiscal note last week while the finance bill was being put together.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Stephen, that wasn't my question. I understood about the finance part. The policy part is what I'm asking, why we didn't hear it in education so that we could have allowed the school communities to come and testify. And I do, in fact, see there are some people here, and so I would ask. So, for example, I don't know whether Mr. Amoroso would like to speak about it or Mr. Kroonquist. I know there's somebody from the plans who are here. I do have an amendment, Senator Cohen, so I could offer the amendment and ask for testimony, but these folks haven't had a chance to.
What was it?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Stevens.
Senator Bonoff, the committee or the bill has been through Education Committee.
Yes.
Through state and local,
education
through
finance,
judiciary, yeah. And now it's here in finance
and commerce.
So they're
in commerce.
So, Mr. Chair, it was heard in education policy, just not education finance.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. I'll withdraw that request then. But I do have an amendment, but if you want to continue the discussion first.
Senator Stephen, let me ask, or maybe Mr. Redke can help me. I guess I didn't realize that school board members and related individuals were not subject to the gift ban until seeing the bill. What's the definition of a district school officer who would now be covered by the gift ban?
Mr. Chair, I'd ask counsel to clarify that. I know that, as you'll see, the language includes school board members, superintendents, and I guess I'm not clear on what the definition of district officers is.
Mr. Bowden, do you?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a ready answer for you on that one. I can look it up.
You've never said that to me before.
Always a first.
Let me ask another question relative to that. So I understand the policy issue, and you've included school principal. Let me just ask a hypothetical. What about a high school athletic director who is offered, you know, I realize, you know, these aren't professional football teams or anything, but could there be some kind of local sports apparel manufacturer who says, would your kids use our sports apparel, and we'll give it to you.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I'd ask counsel to clarify, but I think that the intent of the language was to discourage the incentive to direct a health insurance, to direct a school district towards a particular health insurance plan. And so that was the intent. And maybe Mr. Nauman, Mr. Nauman could answer what a definition of a school district officer is, and
well,
that could bring some clarity.
A couple things. That would be beyond Mr. Nauman's purview, I believe. That'd be Mr. Bodern. But separate from that, and I recognize that the issue you bring in front of us is if somebody were to accept a gift some of it would be proffered a gift. To do some with a health plan. That was the direction of Senator Peterson's comments. But since you're putting this in statute now, and I recognize my question goes beyond what your bill is, but I just wonder about other hypotheticals, and maybe it's a consideration for your subcommittee as opposed to this bill, but it seems to me that it might be a little bit broadly drawn, or maybe should be broadly drawn, but possibly subject to a larger conversation in your subcommittee if it hasn't already been heard. And I can't recall the conversation. Again, I thought school officials were already subject. So, but I would still be curious, Mr. Bodden, if you're able to define at some point what a district school officer is. Further questions on the bill?
No.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Senator Stephen, when this bill came to Commerce, I was really surprised at the amount of change that happened from last year and several years before that of just imposing a state insurance plan. I think this is just a really good compromise from where we were at before. And I think it's definitely worth finding out what the insurance rates would be if they were more readily compared to other insurance rates. So I'm really strong supporter of this and really surprised and grateful that the compromise is such that all we're going to do here is find out what the insurance rates are going to be and what they could be and start doing some comparison. It's too easy to just keep getting the same insurer over and over again without doing many comparisons. So I think this has come a long way from where we were at, and I appreciate the hard work you've done on this.
Okay, Sarah Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd offer the A16.
Okay, if the amendment can be distributed. Senator Sieben. I'm sorry, Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Sieben, this amendment is very simple. It just exempts the self-insured independent school districts from the provisions of this bill. The districts that I represent, for the most part, are self-insured. And the thing that I object to about the overall policy is my faith in the ability of local boards, administration, and teachers to work together to really have the plan that works best for them. And so in particular, the self-insured districts have worked in many cases for years to develop programs that fulfill their needs with regard to wellness, with regard to sharing of premiums, and in some cases, these are central parts of the negotiated package, and so I'm uncomfortable having the state insert themselves into that process in a process that actually has kept costs as low as possible and has very satisfied constituencies, satisfied administrators, satisfied teachers, satisfied board members, and satisfied parents. So I have gotten many, many emails requesting that I offer this amendment, and so that is why I do so today. And I would stand for questions, and it's up to you, Mr. Chair, if you would like any testimony with regard to the amendment or not.
Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, I would respectfully oppose the amendment and point out to you and to the committee members that we've made a number of changes to the legislation that's before us to specifically address concerns related to self-insured districts. There's a new section at their request. We added flexibility to the timelines of the self-insureds. We clarified that requests for proposals can be written specifically for third-party administered services at the self-insured district's request. And we clarified that districts don't need to do additional work to receive a PEAT bid. So, in other words, I I understand some of the concerns that self-insured districts will say things are going along swimmingly right now and we don't want to have to go out and get additional bids. But again, Senator Bonoff and committee, this is just requiring them to get a bid. It's not saying that they have to move into the PEEP plan or move away from whoever they're using as their third-party administrator. I'd also point out that districts are able to sign contracts, health insurance contracts, that are up to 5 years long under current law. The bill requires them now to get sign-off on a long-term contract from the employees who are impacted, or the but that said, if the contract is such a great deal or there is a good deal, then there wouldn't be any problem in getting that sign-off. So, again, districts are now already able to limit their RFPs to every 5 years, which is the current law, and that won't change under this under the legislation that's before you. So, again, I would encourage members to vote no on this amendment.
Mr. Chair, a follow-up
Senator
to that.
Bono.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Sieben, the other thing that I would say about this overall proposal is that the landscape of providing health insurance is very different today than it was just a year ago or 2 years ago with the Affordable Care Act. And I think that now is not the time to put forward a new proposal. I think now is the time to explore how we can take advantage of the new marketplace and the new potential for savings that comes with the you know, having the exchange, for example. And I don't know whether or not that will in the future be a place where independent school districts, particularly small districts, can partake. We would that would be a question for Senator Lurie's committee. But again, to me, this is not the approach nor the time to put forward this proposal. So I would ask for a roll call vote on my amendment.
All right, we have the A16, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Bonoff, a question that I have. I, you know, never been involved in the K-12 education committees in the 7 years that I've been here. But I do understand local school boards, and that means local. Is this giving them and there's a list here that's been handed out that I think that pertains to your amendment. Does this give them the opportunity to make their own decisions? I believe that's what your amendment allows to happen. They're allowed to have their own insurance.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, in all cases, you know, with respect to Senator Sieben, they would ultimately make their own decision. What this amendment does is say that this independent self-insured school districts do not have to follow the process laid out within this. They would just continue to do that as they've done before on an independent basis.
And a follow-up. Apparently, obviously, the school districts that are on this list want to be able to do that, and I agree. I think it's a good amendment.
All right, we have Senator Bonoff's motion on the A16 amendment. If there's no further discussion, the clerk will take the roll, and the chairman votes no.
Anderson.
Yes.
Bonoff.
Yes.
Champion.
No.
Dibble.
No.
Fishbach.
Yes.
Goodwin.
No.
Ingebrigtsen.
Yes.
Latz.
Yes.
Limmer.
Yes.
Lori. Miller. Newman. Nino. Pappas.
No.
Peterson.
Yes.
Saxog.
Yes.
Sieben.
No.
Stumpf. Tomasoni.
No.
Westrom.
Yes.
Uyghur.
No.
Lori. Miller.
No.
Nino. Stumpf.
Vote of 10 to 9, the amendment carries. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Peterson.
Yeah, I see on the fiscal note here there's a $294,000 cost that appears to be ongoing, but I was just looking through the bill and I don't see an appropriation at all. Would the Senator Sieben or whoseever finance budget this is going to deal with, is that something that's just going to be absorbed because I don't see an appropriation, or maybe I'm just missing the appropriation?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Nauman. Mr. Chair and Senator Peterson, you'll recall in yesterday's floor discussion on the supplemental finance bill that in the education article there's a $294,000 appropriation for fiscal 15. That covers the cost associated with the numbers identified in fiscal 15. Staff was instructed that that be made a one-time appropriation. So I think the suggestion is that MMB would internalize the ongoing cost beyond fiscal year 15.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Senator Westrum.
Mr. Chair, maybe Senator Sieben to that point. So can you explain it to us? We're appropriating in the bill that passed yesterday money to the department to do what? And
Mr. Chair,
basically isn't that a subsidy of the insurance?
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrum, the money is for PEEP to respond to bids that school districts are, under the legislation, going to be required to receive from PEEP. And so the fiscal note estimates the cost of each individual proposal that PEEP will give to the districts. And so the money was carried in Senator Cohen's bill yesterday if this legislation should pass. Senator Westrum, I would point out to you that it's a one-time appropriation. So my expectation is that this will help get the bill off the ground or get started, and then into the future, the costs for the proposals can be built into the bids that PEEP will subsequently give.
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, you're saying affirmatively their PEEP is going to internalize that cost as part of their bid? Only in the future, not up front. Why wouldn't they up front? I assume we're not paying for any other insurance plan to put their bid together that we're going to require every 2 years.
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrum, thank you. The cost for MMB to absorb to administer the requirements of the legislation will require PEEP to. I suppose, have more people or put more people towards giving out these bids. And so that is what is contained in the one-time appropriation, or why there's a one-time appropriation. And then into the future, it's my expectation that the costs for administering the bids itself or preparing the bids will be spread out over the other people in the PEEP plan or the other plans included under PEEP.
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, school districts will be getting bid estimates from other plans as well as PEEP, if I understand this correctly. Is that right?
Correct.
So, Senator Sieben, Mr. Chair, who pays for that? If we're going to pay for PEEP's upfront cost here, why would we be subsidizing one insurance pool and not all of them? Assumedly, others are going to have the similar cost, aren't they?
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrum, because I believe that it's in the best interest for school districts to most efficiently use their money, that they do get a bid from PEEP to be able to use that as comparative data against other bids that they will receive. Now, as I said, I think that to get that started, we are requiring PEEP, though, to respond to these bid proposals. So that's why they would need, or why they have said they need a one-time appropriation to begin to do that, so that the costs don't disproportionately fall on the current members of PEEP, because they'll be required to do this additional work. But as I said, into the future, the costs can be spread amongst the new bids that they will be giving out.
So, Mr. Chair, I guess maybe this gets a little to the issue. 2 years, you're requiring a relooking or rebidding the costs. My understanding from school districts in my area is 2 to 5 years is kind of the range they bid. Why did you pick 2 years? Not that I think it's a bad thing for them to bid them out, but what we've been discussing is there is a cost to doing this bid, and so why 2 years? Why not give them a range of flexibility just so we know that it's happening if this bill is going to pass, instead of just a flat out two? Why not 2.5? Why not 3? Why not 5 as an option?
Mr. Chair, they will have that option under the legislation. Right now, districts are able to sign contracts that are up to 5 years long, and then they wouldn't have to get renewal bids within that time frame. What we're saying, though, is that if they have a longer-term contract, they would have to get a bid at the end of that contract.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, at the end of 5 years maximum?
Correct. Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Retke wanted to add to that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, we also did a survey of our school districts, and about 80% or more of school districts, their health insurance contracts are 2 years. So that was one of the reasons why, and then that's when we built in the amendment that Senator Sieben put in to say if you want to go beyond 2 years for those districts that do want to go beyond 2 years, if they have agreement with the employees, they can go up to 5.
Okay. Well, while I've got you here, Mr. Chair, question for you. I've been hearing from my teachers that they're seeing, and Senator Sieben talked about it, 36% increases, 20-some percent. Can you tell me what is accounting for that, and how much of that is related to national health care policy, if any? I'm assuming some of it is. Can you talk to us about that, and why are we seeing such huge increases in premiums? I don't think we've hardly ever seen this big of increase.
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, I don't know all the particulars of the districts in your area, other than I do know that some of the health care providers have changed some of their pooling and insurance rate practices in some of the areas in your part of the state, in terms of a wide pool versus an individual pool. So districts are now being rated on some of their individual claims as opposed to a pool claims data from a wider number of school districts, and that's accounting for some of the individual spikes in some of your districts that I know for sure. But I think it has to do with how the individual providers are rating individual districts. Are they pool rating them, individually rating them, and their claims data on that?
Mr. Chair, I forget your last name.
Mr. Retke. Yeah.
So are you aware of any of that being attributed to the Affordable Care Act mandates, or is that potentially going to be on top of this?
Senator, Chairman, Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, not to my knowledge. I don't have detailed knowledge on what those changes in the cost would be.
Okay.
Further, Senator Engelbrecht.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question to follow up on Senator Westrom would be that overall, statewide, the insurance for schools going up, staying the same, going down, what's the average?
Mr. Ecke.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebretson, it really varies differently and widely depending on your situation. We have districts that are seeing anywhere between, as you said, high 20s to proposed 40%. PEEP, for instance, their rate has been 1.7%. And then you have some districts that are in the middle of a bidding process, and so they have multiple providers trying to get business, and they may have a 0%. So it really does vary quite widely from district to district and depending on your situation. We could try to find a statewide average, but I don't have that off the top of my head.
So Mr. Chair, if I could, so following up again, there are no double-digit increases then in your view of insurance coming forward for school districts?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingram says, there's plenty of places where they have double-digit or more increases, but in some places there's not.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Senator Westrom's point, and much like Senator Peterson mentioned, I administer the health insurance program for my other job for our family business, and we just saw our renewals and our company, small company, 20 employees, up 34%, Senator Westrom, and that was specifically related to the Affordable Care Act, and it's different places throughout the state have different increases, but ours in southeastern Minnesota was a 34% increase.
Okay. Further discussion on the bill? If not, Senator Sieben moves that.
Mr. Chair, I just one follow-up question. So, Senator Sieben, if I'm hearing this right, you're going to be asking with this legislation, you're going to be asking school districts that maybe are doing a good job managing their health care costs, they got a good wellness program, they're keeping their premiums lower at a single-digit rate maybe because of their activities, and low claims have a significant impact to that. So maybe they have a little bit younger workforce. You're asking those school districts to potentially pay more by having to go into a larger bid process system.
Response to Senator Peterson. Mr. Redke.
Sorry. Can you repeat the question, Senator Peterson?
Sure. Currently, certainly there are school districts that are maybe doing a better job than others. They might have a wellness program that encourages folks to conduct healthy activities and basically stay out of the doctor, use a call-in nurse line instead of going to the doctor, that type of thing. You have school districts that are doing a good job of getting their staff to do those things, and they're maybe keeping their insurance rates low. Is this bill going to require them to end up paying more?
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, I do not believe so. I think you saw in the amendment that was added earlier that we specifically add out that does not apply to any wellness provisions that are agreed to. We've seen even, for instance, the Robbinsdale School District they have in their health plan, they have an on-site clinic, which helps keep costs down because it gets people there right away, and that's something that they've worked with Preferred One on during their bid to get that in there to try to save costs and provide that. So we encourage that. I think as you mentioned earlier that a lot of times the contributions to insurance are a major part of negotiations, and our members know that as well. So if there's opportunities for them to save money through health insurance and providing wellness benefits or programs that encourage that, we oftentimes see that our members wholeheartedly sign on with those because they know if you save money on health insurance, you can have more money for other things. So I would.
So then one last follow-up for Mr. Redke. Right now, is there anything, since you're the only one here from Education Minnesota, I'm not sure what other unions are involved in this, but since you're the only one here right now, is there anything that's preventing the education, your unions, in terms of bringing this issue up in their negotiations with the local school board members?
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, there are obviously always issues that can be brought to the table, but there's, as you know, through the bargaining law, there's certain things that are mandatory, permissive, and may or may not be accepted to be discussed as or negotiated with by the board. And so we believe we have the opportunity to bring issues up, but what we're trying to attempt with this bill is to just ensure that districts are getting multiple bids so that there's a more rich discussion between the board and the employees about what options are out there for health care and what works best for employees and the district.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Radke, they could bring it up or they could not?
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, they can always bring issues up.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, education is costs are the largest expenditure in our budget, and we don't have universal care here or single-payer system. And health care costs are going up by double digits in a lot of districts, and I came off of a school board. I know that that's true. We have a duty in this legislature to try to keep those costs down. And if we don't have one system, then we need to have a lot of competition, because that's the problem with the health care field now all over the nation is the lack of competition. This bill just brings competition into the system, and that's our duty to find out ways that we can help save costs in the school district so we can hire more school counselors and not be 49th in the nation in the number of school counselors that we have per student, and that we can have school social workers to help the kids through that are having a hard time getting through. And if we can't bring these costs down, if we can't at least compare costs and make the districts go out and get these comparisons, then we're just throwing money away year after year. And at least this way we get to see what the comparisons can be. And that's been the complaint with the state plan for insurance for the school districts is there. We don't know what PEEP would cost. We don't know what it would be because there isn't enough competitive bids out there. Well, let's find out. Let's just find out. That's all this bill is asking, is that we find out what the costs are.
Senator Engelbrechtson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Something struck me here, something, again, I wasn't aware of, but there's a school district in Minnesota that has a clinic on site. Can you tell me about that and how that bid process works from year to year?
Mr. Chair, Senator Engelbrechtson, it's the Robbinsdale School District, and it's an agreement they have with Preferred One. They're a self-insured district, and it's something they negotiated with as part of their network discounts and third-party administrative service with Preferred One. So it's something that the district negotiated with Preferred One through their contract, and that's about all I know about it.
It's a self-insured one.
Yeah,
okay.
They're a self-insured district.
Thank you.
Do we have further discussion? Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's actually an interesting concept. They have a clinic right on site. Interesting. My question to the testifier or Senator Sieben, do any of the school districts in Minnesota, or probably not yet, but are any of them looking on the MNsure exchange at all for potential renewals in the future?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sieben.
Not that I'm aware of. They might.
Do we have further discussion?
Yes.
If not, Senator Sieben moves that House File 2180 be passed without recommendation.
As amended.
On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Sieben.
Thank you.
Okay,
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, can I just ask you to, I can barely hear you.
I'm sorry.
And so I had to listen very closely, and even still, it's difficult to hear without the microphone really close.
All right. Well, I'm just glad you listened to me closely.
And Mr. Chair, just to confirm, you said without recommendation. I tried to catch you, but
yeah,
I didn't.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay. We have Senator Sparks has been waiting.
Mr. Chair, I have another bill.
Well, Senator, you're on the committee. Are you still going to be here, or?
Well, Mr. Chair. Can be for a while, but we're trying to go
okay.
somewhere else.
All right. Senator Sparks is saying that's okay, Senator Sieben, so go ahead. So Senator Sieben has Senate File 2288.
Mr. Chair and members, this is the online voter registration bill, which has moved through multiple committees in the Senate now. It's before the committee because there was an amendment added to the bill by Senator Kiffmeyer in a previous committee that required a more extensive audit of the security of the online voter registration system that the Secretary of State's office is proposing. And the fiscal note came back for that, as you'll see it's in your packets, that is
that would cost $14,000. And the Secretary of State's office is here to testify to say that they will be able to absorb those costs into their ongoing operating expenses within the Secretary of State's office.
Is there, Ms. Fraser, did you wish to say something or you just, okay. All right. We have an amendment to the bill. Okay, it's the A12 amendment, if we can have that distributed.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, the A12 amendment is largely a technical change. It just makes consistent the language regarding the online voter registration system and the absentee ballot process.
All right. We have Senator Sieben's motion on the A12 amendment. If anybody has it, is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Sieben. Further discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Westrom.
Chair, maybe the author could just give us a little bit of a recap or review of the bill from her perspective.
Senator Sieben.
Mr. Yeah, Chair and Senator Westrom, the bill that's before
Mr.
You
Chair, I'm having a little hard time hearing.
Sorry.
If you can get a little closer to the mic, I think others would benefit too.
Sure.
And I'm pretty close to you. But.
Sorry, Senator Westrom.
I guess that's how some of these tax bills get through. We can't. Nobody can hear what's going on here.
Mr. Chair, I've noticed that about this room and other committees, so I wonder if there's a conspiracy going on.
Is that what it is? Is that
Mr. Chairman?
Is the noise?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Tomasoni.
Senator Rest accused me of the same thing while I was presenting my bill the other day. She couldn't hear me.
Senator
well,
Sieben.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, you do that on purpose.
No, I don't.
Senator Sieben.
It might happen.
Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, the bill that before you lays out in statute the requirements for the state to move towards an online voting system, and it would ensure that the system operates efficiently and securely now and into the future. You'll recall, Senator Westrom, that the Secretary of State has established an online voter registration system that went live this fall, and the legislation that is before you really just puts a system in place to ensure that now and into the future voters or potential voters in Minnesota will be able to register to vote online in a secure fashion. Senator Kiffmeyer, as I mentioned earlier, offered an amendment in an earlier committee that adds additional security requirements to the legislation, so that is included in it. It also, Section 9 of the bill specifies that that UOCAVA, or which is the Uniformed and Overseas Citizens Absentee Voting Act, provisions would be would apply to absentee ballots. So essentially, it would help to ensure that military members who are serving overseas are able to register online. I would just point out that it sets up similar requirements for what data is required as is required under paper registration when voters register with a postcard or on paper now. There are similar requirements in the legislation to ensure that that data is collected. I don't know if you want to talk about it further.
Mr. Chair,
yep. Senator Westrom.
Senator Sieben, your early comment mentioned to move to an online voting system. Can you explain a little more about that? What kind of timeline are we talking about, and what would this online voting system look like? Will we no longer show up at our courthouses or community buildings to vote? Is that that's what you're proposing here?
Mr. Chair, no. Senator Westrom, I apologize if I said online voting system. I meant online registration system.
Oh, that, so, that is what you said, Mr. Chair. Senator
yeah,
Sieben,
I apologize.
I listened closely.
There's nothing, and I will assure you, there is nothing in this legislation that would allow people to vote online. That's not a direction that we're headed with this at all. This simply allows voters to register to vote online.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, that is all you're doing? And it would be similar to somebody sending in the card, postcard, or the form to mail to sign up now?
Senator Westrom, that and Mr. Chair, that is correct.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Sieben, I don't know if that was a Freudian slip or just a slip, but can you tell us right now, today, you're not standing here and the Secretary of State's office is not standing here advocating an online voting system?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, I think that that slip is accountable to how little sleep I've gotten this week.
Okay.
And I assure you that it has, that I am not proposing that there would be an online system for voting either in this legislation, nor is that my intent to bring that legislation forward anytime.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, I'm glad it caught my attention because I thought, man, this is more than what I've read into the bill, but okay. Thank you, Senator Sieben, and
thank you.
I understand with little ones at home, it gets to be difficult.
Is it for the, Senator Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Sieben, you testifier. I received a email yesterday from a gentleman who was concerned about computerized fraud, election fraud, and he says here three basic significant levels of fraud is one is systematic fraud, outright rigging of a vote machine. Or not. This bill isn't about that. But the third thing is about he's concerned about, or there has been documented that there is vote often about absent registration process known as same day registration or online registration. He's very concerned about that we go forward with a bill that is looking to do this, and he links it back to the executive summary of the official California Secretary of State's Red Team report on three election systems that have been found to be questionable. I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts or your testifier has thoughts on this report coming from the state of California.
Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, I'm not familiar with that California report. Perhaps Ms. Fraser is.
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair and members, Beth Fraser, the Deputy Secretary of State, and I'm not familiar with the California report. What I can tell you is that the Minnesota statewide voter registration system was built in-house under the Secretary Kiffmeyer's administration. It's one of the model systems in the country. And the online voter registration system that's been built is has security measures that have a higher standard than for paper forms. So the system that has been built and that the bill requires going forward says that voters who register under the system have to, for example, have a verifiable state ID card number or driver's license number or the last four digits of their Social Security number. And if they do not provide a verifiable ID number, their registration cannot be processed. And so there is a higher standard for these registrations than for paper registrations.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, to the testifier. I'm just concerned that we're going forward with something, and we have reports out there showing that there have been an actual investigation showing that in other states there's concerns and that there are means. They talk here about a chip that can be put into a computer that can actually flip and manipulate the documentation and the information that goes into them. So based on that, I'm questioning whether we should go forward with this bill.
Further discussion, Senator Engelbrecht.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just maybe this can clarify my question with regards to the receipt of an approved registration. How does that work? is it when you walk into the voting precinct that the next time and your name is on their list so you're able to vote? How does it work? How do I get a receipt back that I know that the electronic information that I've passed back and forth to the Secretary of State works?
Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, the way the system works is that you enter your information, and it requires that you provide all of the required information. If you try to not provide your address or something, it will not allow you to proceed. So you have to fill in all of the required fields, and when you hit submit, you get a screen that says your information has been submitted. You'll receive an email within the next few days. After you hit submit, the computer systems verify your name, date of birth, and the ID number that you provided with another government database. And once that has been once that happens, you will receive an email. Either you'll receive an email if there's a problem that says, "I'm sorry, your information could not be verified. If you believe that you made a typo, you know, feel free to try again." If the information can be verified, then you'll receive an email that says you are now registered to vote. Like every other registered voter, you will receive a postcard in the mail to verify your address with your polling place. And then, just as if you'd sent in a paper application, when you show up to vote, your name will be on the roster with the other voters.
Okay. Further discussion on Senate File 2288. If not, Senator Sieben moves. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Senator Sieben and I have discussed this bill, you know, a good deal as it has passed through committees. And Senator Sieben has allayed almost all of my fears with respect to online voter registration. The one area that continues to plague me is that of security. The idea that the folks who are signing up online are who they say they are, and once the government, the Secretary of State's office, gets that information, it is in a position to keep it secure. And to date, I'm still not comfortable at all with some of the problems that the government has had with respect to our private data, unfortunately leaking out. I won't bother with giving you examples today, but you know, I think we're all aware of the fact that that has happened. So my concern remains around the security. Now, I understand in Section 2, Subdivision 8, there is a bunch of language in there about website security. But I remain, even though the bill says the website and the data has to remain secure, I'm simply not yet convinced that the Secretary of State is in a position, that office is in a position to make this data any more secure than, say, the DNR or the driver's license folks or MNsure or any other government agency that has access to our private data. So unless and until I am satisfied that our data is going to be secure and that the website is, in fact, secure, I am not going to be in a position to support this bill. And I hope that Senator Sieben will continue to work with us so that we can come to some kind of an agreement on how to satisfy this issue. And I say that principally because I think Senator Sieben is on the right track as far as online registration is concerned. It is something that is going to happen. I think it's a good idea. I think it is, as the years pass, becoming more and more acceptable. And I think it's ultimately going to be a very easy, convenient way for people to register to vote. But I am simply, given the track record of some of the state agencies with the state of Minnesota, I am not convinced that the Secretary of State's office is in any better position to protect our private data than the other state agencies are. And for that reason, I will tell you that I will not support the bill at this time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Do we have further discussion on the bill? Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, I would just urge members to support this initiative. There's no guarantee with regard to a person, you know, being right in front of somebody that they are who they say they are. And as was stated, we don't even require a driver's license in that regard. And so I believe there is a higher threshold, and that that it is important that we provide our citizens with the kind of access that we've all come to expect in a 24/7 data-driven society. So I hope that we will take this step and vote for this initiative.
Senator Sieben moves that Senate File 2288, as amended, be recommended to
roll
pass.
Roll call, Mr. Chair.
Roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll. Chairman votes yes.
Anderson.
No.
Bonoff.
Yes.
Champion. Dibble.
Yes.
Fishbach.
No.
Goodwin.
Yes.
Ingebrigtsen. Latz. Limmer.
No.
Lori.
On the bill.
Miller.
Yes.
Yes. Newman.
No.
Nino. Pappas.
Yes.
Peterson.
No.
Saxog.
Yes.
Sieben.
Yes.
Stumpf. Tomasoni.
Yes.
Westrom.
No.
Uyghur.
Yes.
Champion. Latz.
Yes.
Lori. Nino. Stumpf.
And a vote of 11 yes, 7 no, the motion passes. Thank you, Senator Sieben. Senator Sparks has been waiting patiently. the House files come over to the Senate File 2220, but Senator Pappas moves the substitution of House File 2658 for presentation by Senator Sparks. On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. And so you know, we're working off the language on Senate File 2220, but now substituted by House File 2658. So, Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to present Senate File, or House File, I'm sorry, 2658, which is the Workers' Comp Advisory Council bill. It contains only language that was agreed upon by the members of the Advisory Council. Sections 1, 2, and 3 are adjustments based on provisions passed in last session's bill. Sections 4 and 5 are housekeeping updates for the administration of the work comp program. And sections 6, 7, and 8, the rest of the bill, are housekeeping unsession provisions that remove outdated and obsolete work comp provisions from statute. Mr. Chair, I do have the A1 amendment, if someone would like to offer that, and I could certainly go into more detail whenever you prefer, Mr. Chair.
Okay, and before that, I skipped over the division report. Senator Saxog moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. And I believe, Mr. Nauman, you wanted to make a comment?
Mr. Chair, member, just a small housekeeping matter. There is a $31,000 fiscal note associated with this bill. It's a general fund impact with tails of the same amount each year. It was assumed in, it was heard in Senator Saxog's division of state government, state departments and veterans affairs, and they included this amount in meeting their target. So although it's not carried in their, in the finance bill, it's assumed in their target.
Okay, and then we have the A1 amendment being distributed, which appears to be a technical amendment. Senator Sparks, or is there somebody else?
Mr. Chair, this amends Section 4 of the bill, which deals with the implementation of the new coding system for medical expenses. Due to changes occurring at the federal level, we are removing the date for implementation of this change and designating that it should occur when the federal government finalizes the move to the new coding system. I'll certainly have Deputy Commissioner give you more information or details if you need so, Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry, did I hear somebody... Okay. Otherwise, Senator Pappas moves adoption of the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. I think the motion carried. Further discussion on the bill.
Pardon? You want a redo?
I heard somebody say it. I've always. Yes, I know. Is there further discussion on the bill? Would anybody like to move the bill?
I will.
Senator Goodwin moves that House File 2658, as amended, be recommended to pass. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Sparks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Pappas, we'll try to get through your bill. All right, we have Senate File 2506, but we have the House File that's come over. Senator Pappas moves adoption of House File. Okay. Right, apparently we have Senator Pappas to delete everything amendment that incorporates the division report.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we want the Senate language, and Council had some technical changes.
Okay, so.
It's at the bottom of your file. It's on last on the agenda. Right.
Oh, okay, this amendment to the House file. So Senator Pappas moves adoption of the House file 3014, and then we can move the amendment.
Thank you.
So on that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Okay, then we have a delete everything amendment, an A1 amendment drafted to House File 3014, which incorporates the Senate language as amended by the division. That's my understanding. Is that correct? So to put the bill in the shape that we'd like to work from, Senator Pappas moves adoption of the A1 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, there are two small technical amendments that Senator Pappas could verbally incorporate in her delete everything, and they're just cross-references. So on page 3, line 15 of the amendment, there's a cross-reference to subdivision 3. That should be subdivision 2. And then, if you'll bear with me, on page 7, line 10, there is a reference to section 179A.12. So after section, insert or delete section and insert sections 179.11, comma 179.12, and that should suffice to take care of cross references.
So, Senator Pappas, do you incorporate those? Okay, so Senator Pappas incorporates those changes to the A1 amendments. So to put the bill in the shape we'd like to discuss. Senator Pappas' motion to adopt the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, this is a $125,000 appropriation for the to develop the rules and create a board called the Public Employment Relations Board under the Bureau of Mediation Services. The board would handle unfair labor practice charges administratively, replacing the current practice of handling unfair labor practice charges through the district courts. The bill only applies to public employment, not the private sector. Private sector employees are covered under the National Labor Relations Act. The board would begin, like as I mentioned, $125,000 would be appropriated to the Bureau of Mediation Services to cover the cost of setting up the board and promulgating rules. The reason for the bill, if people are interested, is that by going through district court, it costs both sides quite a lot of money. You know, it could cost $50,000 to $75,000. Instead of resolving conflicts through a mediation process, which is going to cost closer to like $5,000. One member of the board is appointed by the governor to represent employers. One member of the board is appointed by the governor to represent employees. And the third member of the board would be selected by the other two.
And the appropriation was tracking in Senator Tomasoni's article, I believe.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. $125,000 was appropriated now by the Senate yesterday in the supplemental budget bill.
All right. Further discussion on House File, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Pappas, a little confusing on the appointing process. The governor appoints one, the employees, employers appoint one, and then the two of them do the appointing of the other one. What if they don't? How do you resolve a conflict there between two members voting for one person?
Mr. Chairman, the governor appoints two, one to represent the employers and the employees, and then they agree on a neutral third person. So
That's the question. How do you resolve them not agreeing on the third person when you have two members? One votes for one and one votes for the other one. I'm just a technical
question. I think
question.
That the desire is that the third member would be agreeable to both employers and employees as a neutral third party that would be fair to both sides.
Senator Lumber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pappas, your bill, the way it's been amended, now we're just focusing on public employees, not private. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lumber, it never focused on private employees. It's just public employees.
And one question I did have. On the front page, there's a reference to charitable hospitals. And I don't know if that's a defined statutory reference. What is a charitable hospital as opposed to any other hospital?
A nonprofit hospital. I assume maybe Mr. Bodern could address that, or if he's not sure, we can ask Mr. Stanton.
Mr. Bodern.
Mr. Chairman, this is one more I've got to look up for you. I will get back to you, I promise.
No, Mr. Bodern,
this is not Mr. Stanton.
If Mr. Watts never said that to me, it was no more than once. And now it's, but that's okay.
Mr. Chairman, I've used up my quota. I apologize.
So, if the witness can help us.
Yes, I can. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Nicole Blissenbach, and I'm with Education Minnesota. Charitable hospitals are defined in Section 179.35, Subdivision 2, and it includes county and municipal hospitals. So it's essentially they tend to be more in rural areas of Minnesota, the small county municipal hospitals. There are a number located around the state. It does not include HCMC. That is already under PELRA, which is the statute that we're amending. So there are not a large number of them, but they still exist.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lumber.
For the purposes of lines 128 and 129, when we're considering employees of charitable hospitals now as public employees, does that have any impact on pension funds? Or does that not go that far?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lumber, I don't really, I can't think of how it would have an impact on pension funds, but I don't see how it would. We're talking about how to resolve a conflict mm-hmm. between an employer and employee in a more, you know, cost-effective, efficient manner.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm only talking about any unplanned consequences that, by a definition change, are we now automatically making an individual, because of a public employee definition, are we now making them eligible for or slamming them into another pension fund because of that? I see a lot of people behind you, behind the testifying table, shaking their heads no. And but no oral testimony has come out of that shaking of the head.
No, Mr. Chairman, I don't think it'll have any impact on
all right.
Pension. It would have to go to the Pension Commission if it did.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, you had made mention that perhaps a nonprofit hospital would be considered charitable, but I think every hospital is considered nonprofit, no matter how much money they make.
I think Mr. Bodern might have.
So, Mr. Chairman, the statutory definition of charitable hospital includes all county and municipal hospitals and any hospital, no part of the net income of which inures to the benefit of any private member, stockholder, or individual. I think it's as Senator Pappas described it. And you heard the witness.
Yeah. All right. Senator Bonoff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, I have some questions. I've been listening to various constituents who work for the state who have come to me with personal grievances, and there's been a pattern whereby their grievances are investigated by the actual department where they work, and so there's an inherent conflict of interest just in that. And so I see this and I think, oh, maybe that could help. But and then I noticed there's many cases that there are places in this legislation that says there will be an investigation. Who pays for that investigation? Because currently, if an employee has a grievance, and they make that grievance known to their superior, the agency pays for the investigation, and they hire the investigator. So under this, how would that work?
Ms. Blissenbach.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, the way the legislation is written is if there is a claim of an unfair labor practice as defined under PELRA, a charge could be filed with the Public Employment Relations Board. That board would then investigate the unfair labor practice charge and come to a determination. If there is merit, a complaint could be issued. If there is not, it would be dismissed.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, how about the ongoing cost of that investigation? Where is that funded? I know, for example, with the medical practice boards, the Attorney General's office does those investigations. It's a pretty comprehensive and thorough exercise that takes a lot of staff and a lot of time. So how will that work?
Mr. Chairman, I mean, my assumption is if it's a grievance process that the union will pay for those costs, and what we're arguing here is that those costs are still a lot less if we use this process rather than go through the district court.
Thank you. One follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pappas, we currently have the Bureau of Mediation Services, so why couldn't those individuals making those complaints go directly to the Bureau of Mediation Services now?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, currently has it set up unfair labor practices, the only recourse is to go to district court. So this would allow an unfair labor practice charge to be filed with the Public Employment Relations Board. That is basically covered under the umbrella of the Bureau of Mediation Services. So through the rulemaking process, they could determine to use the current mediators to serve as investigators under this process. It kind of depends on, you know, what they choose to do, but that could be dealt with in the rulemaking process.
Thank you.
And, Mr. Chairman, just to follow up, 32 other states do use an administrative process. Only 3 states process charges through the courts: Minnesota, Arkansas, and Texas. Mr. Chairman, I did forget, I do have a A2 technical, well, not a technical amendment, but I have an A2 amendment language requested by MMB.
Okay, if that could be distributed.
And I'll let my witness explain the amendment.
Okay, if we could just have another second as it's being distributed. Okay. You're good. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. These amendments were discussed with, they were brought up after concerns were raised by MMB. We met with them, and this is all language that they proposed. The first has to do with the standard for issuing a complaint. They were worried that the standard would not the board would not be able to dismiss frivolous complaints. The standard allows them to do that in a little bit more clear manner. The second amendment deals with the deferral process. So this would allow, through the rulemaking process, the board to determine when charges should be deferred to arbitration. And then the third has to do with the remedies available when an unfair labor practice is substantiated. It basically gives more discretion so that make-whole relief could be provided rather than determining exactly what remedies should be provided. So these changes were to address the concerns raised by MMB, and it is the language proposed by MMB.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'll move the A2 amendment.
Okay, we have Senator Pappas' motion in front of us. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed.
Mr. Chairman,
carries.
Then I'd move House File 3014 as amended be recommended to pass.
On Senator Pappas' motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Pappas. Okay, the last bill on the agenda is Senate File 2098, Senator Saxhog. It's the Outdoor Heritage Fund Appropriations Bill.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
I'm sorry, before the meeting started, did you say we were not going to hear Senate File 36?
That's correct.
Yeah, I didn't need to talk about it. point that out to someone.
Senator Saxhog. Senator Saxhog moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Today we're presenting the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council recommendations. The bill appropriates almost $109 million for outdoor and conservation projects. Of that, $106.6 million, $37.4 million is for prairies, $32.2 for habitat, $24 for wetlands, and $16 for forest projects. As you know, this is the sixth set of recommendations made by this council. The previous five were accepted by the legislature with modest changes. Senator Ingebrigtsen and I are the two Senate members on that council. With me today is Heather Koop, Assistant Director, Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. She's going to provide some more detail on those recommendations and answer any questions you may have.
And before the testimony, just so I think members know that the council recommends appropriations on an annual basis, and that's distinguished from other parts of the legacy monies.
And Mr. Chair, before Ms. Koop continues the testimony, I might note that this has been in Senator Tomasoni's committee and passed out of there. So,
yes. Ms. Koop.
Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Heather Koop, for the record, Assistant Director at the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council.
You'll have to pull that closer.
As Senator Saxhog indicated, this appropriation bill is the sixth annual appropriation recommendation made by the council from the Outdoor Heritage Fund, and it totals $109 million. You'll note the bill that you have before you states that it is $108 million. That was before an additional amendment was made in Senator Tomasoni's committee. So I just wanted to walk through very briefly what those changes are to the bill, and then I'll stand for questions.
And before you do that, let me just inquire. Was the additional appropriation then on the forecasted growth with as a consequence of the November-March forecast, or was that you had left money at the bottom line? So
that's correct, Senator, and there still is approximately 2% left on the bottom line of the Outdoor Heritage Fund. The additional recommendation was for $700,000 to an appropriation to the Shell Rock River Watershed District. A prior appropriation in Minnesota Laws 2013 had funded a project that, after construction documents came in, was a little bit over, and so this additional appropriation will help them to complete that project.
Okay, thanks.
If I may, Ms. Koop and Mr. Chair and members, it's important to note $700,000 was made as an additional recommendation by the council.
Okay. Ms. Koop.
So in addition to the bill that you have before you, there was additional language written for 4A, the RIM WRP program, which amended the language in this bill, Minnesota Laws 2014 proposed, Minnesota Laws 2013 and 12, in recognition of changes to the federal farm bill, which was recently passed. It allows the program to continue to do wetland restoration work, but since the names of the programs had changed, we wanted to make sure that these prior appropriations, as well as this one and this bill, was able to go forward with the intended purpose. As I just mentioned, there was an additional recommendation of $700,000, which was made by the council, to fund the Shell Rock River Watershed's Albert Lea Lake appropriation. We also made minor technical changes to the amounts designated in the Wild Rice Program, and several technical amendments or technical changes were made, and the totals items were renumbered accordingly. There was also a verbal amendment in Senator Tomasoni's committee to make a technical change to the appropriation end date for the LCC appropriation from 2016 to 2015. There was an additional amendment made to several of the prairie area programs to include conservation, haying, and grazing under a management plan that is already in place, being implemented, may continue. This clarified language around haying and grazing practices as a conservation tool used by many entities to manage natural resource lands to make sure that emergency hay and grazing orders did not take effect on lands for which there was not a conservation management plan in place that allowed that activity. Finally, there was an additional amendment made in the committee to prohibit legacy funds, in this case the Outdoor Heritage Funds, from being used to acquire property through eminent domain, and that language was inserted in the bill as well. With, in addition, a committee, Senator and committee, I just want to point out that the council has been very judicious in its recommendation and has always kept a nice sum on the bottom line as a cushion. And this year, with changes anticipated in the recent sales tax bill, it will leave approximately 2% on that bottom line. With that, I will stand for questions.
Thank you. Questions from the committee. Senator Engelbrechtson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment, and then I do have an amendment I'd like to offer. Mr. Chair, members, being part of this committee has always been a true honor and pleasure from its beginning, and Senator Saxog worked very hard on this bill to get this through the good work of the herding the members down the path, if you will, all 12 members moving forward, and with the assistance of Bill Becker and Heather Coop and other staff. So they've done, as usual, a great job of putting together a great bill, and I know there's been talk about and discussed about, Senator Cohen, you brought this up, this is a yearly appropriation, and those discussions are ongoing, whether we talk about a biannual, but it seems to work out the best for us to go annually, but I think that's going to be a discussion for another day. But with that, Mr. Chair, I do support the bill. It is a good bill, but I do have one amendment, if I might indulge Senator Saxog, which I have already talked to him about this, but it would be the, I believe it's the A14 amendment, A14-1091.
A6, I think, is what I have.
I'm sorry?
A6 is what I have.
Yeah, I believe it has changed due to the electronics for Senator Westrum, so it's A. I don't have a copy of that one. I don't think the verbiage has changed at all. It's just changed electronically.
Okay. Well, I think
Mr. Chair, it is the A6 amendment.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So, Senator Engelbrechtson, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In consultation with Senator Saxog, the author of the bill, and also staff, this is a Carver County Parks and Trails grant modification. And if I could ask a member, a testifier, to come forward, Mr. Marty Walsh from Carver County, they could better explain the amendment to those that have any questions moving forward. This is not an this money has already been appropriated, but I'll let Mr. Walsh describe the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Engelbrechtson. Carver County is not asking for
if,
any more.
If you could just identify yourself for the record, please.
Yes, please. Marty Walsh with Carver County. I'm the Parks Director. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Again, Senator Engelbrechtson. Carver County is not asking for any more or any new money. What we are seeking to do is amend the 2014-2015 appropriation for Parks and Trails Legacy Funds. We are would like to move funds from a 2015 trail project, have a small amount of funds appropriated for a parks programmer position. This is in response to increased demand for outdoor recreation activities and a growing park system. We would match $25,000 of legacy funds with $40,000 of county general funds. The majority of the funds would be used to match dollars to construct and pave roads and parking lots at Lake Minnewashta Regional Park. Legacy funds of $272,000 would be used to match $562,000 of state park road account funds. These are dollars that we didn't know that we were going to be receiving at the time that we put together the bill for the 2014-2015 parks appropriation. The county's request will help leverage $612,000 of non-legacy funds with $297,000 of legacy funds and helps maximize both areas. I'd stand for questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Walsh?
So, Mr. Chair, I just make a brief comment that, yes, these are redirected. It's a redirected appropriation. It came out of the council's recommendations, and I think it's fine.
OK. Okay, so we have Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair, if I may comment as well, I thank you, Senator Saxog, for working with us on this. And I have talked to the staff and Senator about trying to stay away from creating an omnibus bill when it comes to the Outdoor Heritage Bill, and I agree with that. But I appreciate the indulgence here due to the fact that this money has already been expended, and the folks came forward to me and asked if I would bring this forward, and I would appreciate the support on this amendment.
We have Senator Ingebrigtsen's motion in front of us.
I would move the A6 amendment.
If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question I have is one of process. I know that I'm trying to understand the decision-making that's represented in this bill. I know I'm a member of a subdivision of the Finance Committee that's supposed to be focusing on the legacy bill and the legacy funds. And I don't recall a single meeting we've had regarding this type of bill or the appropriations that are represented. We've talked about 12 minutes now on considering the spending of $108 million. And I'm wondering, was there a committee hearing that I missed? Was there a hearing that was called as a subdivision of the Finance Committee regarding this?
Senator Limmer, the way that it's been handled over the last several years, at least what I've been chairman of the Finance Committee, we have not had, where we've had the appropriations for all the funds, we've had a legacy bill. Where we've had the appropriation only for the council recommendations, that's been a separate bill handled through the regular committee process, and we've not had subcommittee hearings. So I didn't call any subcommittee hearings because this bill was going to be heard within, I don't know, Senator Saxaga, if it went to the policy committee, but certainly was heard in Senator Tomasoni's division and now in the full committee. And that's why we handled it previously.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, in answer to Senator Limmer, in the 12 minutes that we've spent here, I understand that you're feeling on that. We had an extensive committee hearing, though, in Senator Tomasoni's committee.
All right. Mr. Chair, I noticed that on the bill, the descriptive of the bill, it's only been referred to finance on the cover sheet. So that's why I'm raising the question, because I only have the information that I have in front of me. And so I kind of thought that I had some kind of committee assignment charge to analyze this type of funding, and I haven't had an opportunity except for the last 12 minutes to do so.
A couple things, Senator Limmer. First of all, any bill that comes to finance is referred to the Finance Committee, not to a division. So if you look at the bill introductions on the floor, it's the bill introductions are always to a full committee, never to a subcommittee or a division. Second, again, because this was a freestanding bill and it was totally areas totally within the jurisdiction of Senator Tomasoni's division, I felt it was appropriate to simply have it heard in that division and not by another subcommittee or committee.
All right. Mr. Chair, I know I recently saw an article, investigative article by the Twin City Business Magazine back in the fall of last year. And it, for lack of getting into all the detail, it suggested a little bit more scrutiny on this type of funding. And so now we're up to 14 minutes of scrutiny, but at least through finance, I do recognize the previous hearings that you might have had in Senator Tomasoni's committee. But I just thought that as a member that was assigned to a specific subdivision committee, that I would have had a little bit more work to do.
Senator Limmer, you might recall, and I think I indicated this to the full committee in presentation of the supplemental finance bill, and maybe if not with that bill, certainly at some other point, I indicated that there had been discussion and that there would not be a legacy bill, that the other funds involved, the folks involved with the administration of those funds, and this was true of the other fund, all the other funds, clean water, arts, culture, parks, and trails, did not feel it was appropriate to have a full-fledged legacy bill. That question came up because, obviously, with the budget forecast, there was some additional money on the bottom line. And you might also recall that in the supplemental finance bill, there was a request for a single appropriation from the legacy fund. I'm sorry, one larger appropriation, one small appropriation out of the clean water fund. And that had been agreed to by, as best I know, any individuals or groups involved with that fund. But because this bill was not was going to be a freestanding bill, I felt it was appropriate simply to go to Senator Tomasoni's division. And again, that's been the history. That's what happened 4 years ago. And to be fair, I'm not sure. I'm guessing 2 years ago, with Senator Roebling as chairman, simply because of where the budget was. I don't recall any kind of legacy bill 2 years ago or any discussion. I think that was, again, a reflection of where the budget was at that point. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that does bring up, excuse me, a question, because you do have a subcommittee for legacy, and I understand that. And I think that's what Senator Limmer is talking about, that subcommittee that gets together and meets with the major bill. The major bill would have been last year when you had all three thirds, if you will, the parks and trails, and, or four sections of the bill. And I guess that does bode a good question as to is that subcommittee not going to meet every other year then because this is an individual bill, standalone bill? That's the decision of the chair. I understand that. But does that subcommittee have the opportunity to not necessarily scrutinize, but at least go over the Lessard Sam's portion of it every other year then? That's probably how it's going to work then.
Well, there are a couple things. Certainly in terms of appropriations, because this bill was going to receive a full hearing in Senator Tomasoni's division, and every appropriation in this bill would be in areas covered by Senator Tomasoni's division. Senator Ingebrigtsen, I think you serve on that division, if I'm not mistaken. And so I thought to simply send it through another subcommittee, not a division, might have been somewhat superfluous. Senator Limmer raises other questions, and maybe those weren't addressed within the division. And Senator Limmer raises questions raised by, I think, various news articles as well as, I think, the legislative auditor. And there were some particular questions raised relative to the operation of the council. There have been some other questions raised as to how some of the funds are appropriated generally. Maybe it would be appropriate during the interim to have a meeting of the subcommittee which would discuss these broader questions and maybe might provide the avenue, Senator Limmer, for a fuller discussion as opposed to, as we rush things through during a shorter legislative session, to have a fuller discussion about the operation of the legacy funds, how they're being handled, questions raised. Because, Senator Limmer, you've raised some process, procedural, and substantive questions. I think that's what I inferred from your question, that you have some of those concerns, and that might be a better approach to have a much fuller discussion as opposed to in the context of this particular bill at this particular hour. Does that make sense, Senator Limmer?
Yeah, I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman. And so I hope we could have a meeting.
I'll make a note, and we'll do that at some point during the interim. Senator Engelbrecht.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that. I would certainly like to have that discussion with Senator Limmer. I know exactly what he's talking about, the Business Weekly article that came out a couple of months ago, maybe now. But I looked at that as an opinion, really not any different than any article that has come out in the past with regards to that particular point.
And
to, you mentioned the legislative auditor. The legislative auditor has gone through, I think, Sard Sam's commission committee at least two times in the last 5 years and given nothing but an A-plus rating. So, I mean, that hasn't been done.
And don't misunderstand my comment. This would not be directed simply toward one part of the legacy monies, but it actually might not be a bad idea to have a fuller discussion of the legacy fund, all funds, not just simply the Outdoor Heritage Fund. We now have we're in what, the fifth year of the legacy monies, and it's pretty significant. It's obviously had a significant impact on the state. It involves all corners of the state geographically, a huge number of things going on in the state. And it might be a nice time to just revisit where it is and how it's operating, not just directed toward this fund, but directed toward all of them. And I think when I made a reference to the legislative auditor, I think there have been, if not concerns or questions, but discussion by the auditor relative to other parts of the legacy monies. Yes. So I think Senator Limmer's comment is at least the thrust of it is well taken, that we should have a fuller discussion and do it preparatory to next year's session before we're in the middle of the appropriations and get overwhelmed by that. So, Senator Limmer, does that?
Yeah, I'm very pleased that you agree with me once this year, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I was hoping you'd agree with me yesterday, but, you know, what can I say? Okay, so is there further discussion on the bill itself? If not, Senator Saxog moves that Senate file 2098 as amended be recommended to pass. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is going on the floor then.
Yes. And then we'll meet tomorrow at 8:30 back in 123 where we can hear everybody. So, adjourned.